out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Keeping It Real with former NFL wide receiver and Auburn University standout, Jairus McIntyre. Are you ready to hear it live from the athletes, celebrities, and fans? Jairus, his co-hosts, and his guests will keep you laughing, thinking, and talking. Now, here's your host, Jairus McIntyre.
What is going on, listeners? We are back on Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Jairus McIntyre. I got Coach Paul and Ron Mack on the line to start this thing off. And obviously the Super Bowl edition or preview of the Super Bowl, the pre-Super Bowl edition of Keeping It Real. And I'm going to just start off straight up and ask them, who's going to win the Super Bowl? Starting with you, Coach Paul. Who's going to win Super Bowl?
Want to give a shout-out. What's going on, J-Man? Keep it real today, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep it real, you know. Got to go back 2008, February 3rd, the Giants 17-14 over New England. And will Eli become one of the elite? I mean, he's already one of the elite. He's a Manning. I mean, he's a second-generation player. It's in his blood. His brother's done it. He's got one. Can he get two? I think he can. And the Giants' defense is cranked up, you know. A couple boys from the Tampa Bay area, JPP. You know what I mean? The Giants, I got to go with the G-Men.
Ron Mack, you ain't been on Keeping It Real in a while. And it's been a lot of great playoff football. But obviously, if listeners, you don't know, I'm sure you do know if you listen to Keeping It Real, who's in the Super Bowl, the New York Football Giants and the New England Patriots, with Tom Brady going for that fourth ring, and will put him to an elite company and probably can go down and say he is the greatest of all time if he can win the Super Bowl. Obviously, people will beg to differ with Montana and Elway and others, but he'll be definitely in that conversation, if not by himself. But Ron Mack, man, who's going to win this game? I know you say a lot about Eli. You know, you think Tom Brady's a good quarterback, obviously. But before we got on air, you said you love New York's defense. Who gonna win?
Well, you asked me where I've been. I told Coach Chiswick I wasn't gonna call in until we had an offensive coordinator. So now I'm back. You know what I'm saying? I personally don't like Eli Manning that much as a quarterback. I think he's overrated, and I think he's propped up because of who his dad is and who his brother is. But with that being said, the Patriots are a very flawed team to be able to make it this far. They have no outside passing game with receiver play. I mean, they pass almost exclusively to slot receivers and tight ends. They have no real running game. They're running sweeps and stuff with tight ends, and it's just amazing how coaching really matters, man, because that team is really not that good. Their defensive secondary sucks. You know, they got a, you know, decent front seven, you know, but to make a long story short, I believe that the Giants have the most vicious front four in the NFL, bar none. I believe they will get pressure on Tom Brady with four people. I don't think that the Patriots will be able to run the ball at all. So I don't see a Super Bowl like last time where it's 17-14. With New England's weakness in the secondary, I think Eli's going to play decent. I think he's going to make a big mistake or two, which is going to keep the game close. But in the end, I think the Giants win something like 34 to 30 or something like that.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I beg to differ as far as what you're saying about Eli Manning. First and foremost, Eli Manning, he went to Ole Miss, and I was thinking the way you were thinking. I was Peyton Manning's brother. But what he did at Ole Miss, and we know how Ole Miss is in the SEC, I mean, he had them playing to a level, and I want to say they even went to Atlanta. I mean, they won the West with Eli there back then, so I still, he made me a believer then, but I was still like, he's nowhere near his brother. I mean, he's not his brother. And as time has went on in the NFL, and people always bashing Eli, and saying his body language this and his body language that, and you look at his numbers, and you look at what he's doing, and I don't see how people can say he's overrated. I mean, he's putting up numbers. People don't say Phillip Rivers is overrated, and he does. I mean, he does what Phillip Rivers does with the Super Bowl, trying to win another one. So, I mean, it's hard to say that he would be, that he is an overrated quarterback. I mean, he's playing in a huge market in New York, winning playoff games, won a Super Bowl, putting up big numbers with all the people saying what they say. I think it's hard to say that he's overrated. I mean,
it's one of his first big years. Now I think he may have had big numbers last year, but this year here has been his best year by far. So
absolutely. But I'm just saying from his time in New York, I mean, to have them consistently, because if you think about it, since he's been in New York, I mean, the Giants have been somewhat a contender in the NFC East. I mean, it's not like they've been rock bottom like we here are down here in Tampa right now, trying to go find
Chip Kelly.
You know, they've never been that far down in the dumps with Eli Manning. And if you can hold the team steady and actually throw the ball around and put up numbers and have your team consistently able to be in the playoffs, I don't say that's overrated on top of winning a Super Bowl and going into a Super Bowl. Now what you say about New England and them not having an outside pass game, I mean, that's just what they do. I mean, they have three deadly weapons from the slot with Hernandez, the big tight end, what's the guy's name?
Gronkowski
and Walker. I mean, you have three dangerous weapons in the middle. Now reverse roles with New York. They got Victor Cruz on the outside, they got Hakeem Nicks on the outside, and they got Mario Manningham when he wants to catch the football. So he has three outside weapons. I mean, he has three weapons the same way Tom Brady has three weapons. On top of a great offensive coordinator and O'Brien over in New England. So, I mean, I'm looking at them as a wash. I mean, yeah, Mob Bradshaw can run the football. Brandon Jacobs can run the football. You know, Ben Jarvin, you know, the big power bat that they have over there, he runs the ball when he has to. And Hernandez has been effective in the run game. So, I mean, I look at the offenses as pretty much the same. Now defensively, that's where it's a little different. Yeah, they have the front seven for New York. But at the same time, you got Belichick coordinating that defense for the New England Patriots. So it's kind of, I mean, anytime Belichick is over there coaching defense, I wouldn't be surprised if Eli looks horrible in the Super Bowl, because he's that kind of coach. The same way he made that read option that Tebow was killing everybody with look like bull crap. I think he's going to come up with a plan to kind of contain Victor Cruz. I think that's the key, containing Victor Cruz and stopping the run. And I think it's going to be an interesting game. My early pick is New England, just because I don't think Brady will let Eli beat him twice on the big stage. So I think at the end of the day, Tom Brady's going to have a huge game to propel him to be another, get him another MVP of the Super Bowl and be in that elite company and with four rings and you know, come to Disney World, and I am Florida. So, you know, that's my prediction as of now. It could change here soon, just depending on how Gronkowski, if that ankle's all right. But we'll definitely have to see. Coach Paul, what's going on down here with these Bucks, man, as far as them searching for Chip Kelly? I mean,
let's talk about coaching first. Ron said it, you know, best. You got Coughlin, Belichick. I mean, these guys are chess masters. It's going to come down to who makes the least amount of turnovers. And it's going to be a war out there. It should be an exciting Super Bowl. That's why I think it'll go under in the score. And hopefully my square that I got at the Super Bowl party will come in. You know, and talking about, before I throw up and talk about the Bucks, I mean, can we get a big name guy, a guy who knows the game? Not just, did you put in your application? You've been doing good over there. You know, you got a winning percentage over there at Skyway. Maybe you can put your application in over there at One Buck Place.
Yeah, no, man. I mean, damn. I mean, from the way it's looking, I mean, they're desperate right now. Chip Kelly turned them down. I mean, they're looking at Mike Sherman. I'm like, come on, man. Mike Sherman, I heard it on the radio this morning, was 25-25 at Texas A&M. Now, I mean, Texas A&M is in the Big 12, and they got all the resources to win football games, and he only went 25-25, and I think, want to say, just got fired or resigned from Texas A&M. Why would you bring him to a Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization that is not going to spend money, that you know, has disciplinary problems with their players? I mean, you need somebody stern like Bill Cowher, and for Bill Cowher to even think about coming down here, you have to open, you know, break bread, as well as give him some control in that front office on player personnel decisions. Because I think that is what's scaring most of these coaches away, is not having the control to bring in who they want to bring in, and you know, release who they need to release. And I think that's going to.
Well, that's why they're bringing in the guys that they're bringing in, because they can keep control. It's going to be a cheat for their payroll. And, you know, it's just basically all about a corporate business decision, you know, bottom line. They're trying to make money. But if you don't win games and fill up the seats, sell merchandise, you're not going to make money in the NFL. So I don't know what their thinking is.
Hey, man, they gotta pay them soccer players over in England, man. They got Manchester United. They got that real money, man. The Bucks is just a toy, man. But I got a name for you, the Coach the Bucks, Sir Nicholas Saban. How about that? How about they get on the phone, get Nick Saban the hell out of Alabama? How about that?
Hey, Nick Saban is going to die in Tuscaloosa. He's going to be like Paterno. Boy, the way he has, you know, turned Alabama. Obviously, they were Alabama. Then they fell off a little bit, and they were regular through my years, and we whooped up on them. But since Saban has set foot in Tuscaloosa, man, I mean, he's built a dynasty. He already has two rings. I mean, first rounders galore. Obviously, being an Auburn man, we definitely want to get him out of Tuscaloosa and bring old Shula or somebody back. But man, I mean, what he's doing in Tuscaloosa is crazy. And I just think he stepped foot in the NFL down in Miami and saw that it was probably a living nightmare for him, except for them millions of dollars he was bringing in. But, I mean, he saw that he was made for the college game and developing players and getting them prepared for the NFL. So I don't think he will ever leave Tuscaloosa. I mean, I hope he does, but I don't think he will. So I'm just trying to figure out who these Bucks are going to get. I mean, obviously I'm not a huge Bucks fan. I'm down here, and it's just crazy how I hear Chip Kelly may be going to the Bucks. I mean, I'm like, who the hell are they going? They're going to run a damn spread offense with a 6'6", 245-pound quarterback that can run but is not a running quarterback. I mean, what are they going to do, draft RG3? I mean, so I don't know the plans they had there, but obviously Chip turned it down to go back to Oregon to try to get a ring, you know, at Oregon. So we'll just have to wait and see. Ron Mack, man, speaking of hires, we hired a guy. How do you even say his name? I don't even know. He's from Temple, the offensive coordinator from Temple, Auburn hired. What's his name?
LaFleur or LaFleur? I have no idea either, sir.
Yeah, we don't know. Coach Paul, have you heard of this guy? I mean, obviously, he was at Temple, I'm sure. You know, you keep
well, on. He was at Florida. He was at Florida with Urban Meyer, which kind of scares me because Urban Meyer just got a job. And if and he went to Temple with a guy from Florida. So if Urban Meyer comes and takes the Ohio State job, you would think, you know, Urban Meyer would have said if, you know, this guy was, you know, like what people are trying to prop him up to be, you would think that Urban Meyer would say, hey, coach, come on to Ohio State with me. And since that didn't happen, it kind of scares me. But it seems like he likes multiple sets, which is what most of the Auburn Nation was calling for. I have no idea why. You know, that all Auburn fans, you know, want to be in the eye and want to line up with two tight ends and kind of play like LSU and Alabama when the spread is what brought Auburn a championship. The spread is what Auburn probably should stay in to solidify a difference between themselves and Auburn. I mean, themselves and Alabama and LSU. But the fan base will get what they want: more foul football, 3 yards and a cloud of dust.
Well, I mean, he is a pro style. He can run a multiple set, you know, and like you said, Ronnie, they need to run the spread according to personnel. But the thing about, you know, with LaFleur, he's worked with Brady and Tebow, two different, totally different style of quarterbacks, you know, made them both successful. So, you know, will he fit in at Auburn? I don't know. You know what I mean? You know how it is in the coaching and the football world. If a guy makes a call and he gives you the thumbs up, and then you interview with the guy and he likes you, you got a good chance. And obviously that's what happened at Auburn. And, you know, he's got both returning quarterbacks. And we'll see what happens, you know, at Auburn. Like you said, you can't just stick with the spread, though. If the eye is what's winning championships, you got to convert to the game. The spread game might be over. A lot of teams are going back to the eye. What do you think, Jairus? You're a running back.
I think it just depends on personnel. Obviously, if you have the personnel to be able to line up and run the football, you know, and have the quarterback who's, you know, a good play-action type of quarterback who can make plays down the field when teams kind of are trying to stop the run, then yes. But if you're not built like that, then obviously you got to run the spread. And teams, you know, the way that Urban Meyer built his teams in Gainesville, obviously they were built for the spread. And the way Rich Rodriguez built his teams in West Virginia, they were built for the spread. I mean, if they try to just switch right away and go to the power game, then I don't think they would be successful at all. But if when you have young quarterbacks, I think it simplifies the offense when it's you know, it's not as much to learn as far as, you know, the read option game and the passes that come off of it and the reads that you have at the line of scrimmage, whereas as the eye game is, you know, more basic kind of football and easier for a young quarterback to kind of get adjusted to. So I think that may be best right now for the young quarterbacks in Frazier and Moles to get their feet wet. And as time goes on, then you can kind of start opening it up, put them in the shotgun, run a little read option and expanding the offense. But for right now, I feel that it's a more, I don't want to say simple, but an offense that they can understand and pick up quickly to just play football and not be thinking as much. Ron Max, you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So obviously, I know you somewhat disagree. You think Auburn needs to run spread and this and that. And I think that they will. But I just think that we will see more under center when it's third and one or second and two and we need 2 yards or we need 1 yard. We'll be able to line up under center. Quarterback takes the snap and hand it to a big, powerful back like, you know, somebody like Jamar Robinson or whomever is going to be carrying the rock.
Like I said, I have no problem with that, Jairus. That's, to me, that's smart football. I hate more than anything to see
third and one, and you in the shotgun. I hate that.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what.
Unless you had Cam Newton, because he's going to get it and go.
Still, even with Cam Newton, you know, like Tom Brady did this weekend, man. He was fourth and goal from the half-inch line. Get on the center, jump in the air, put the ball over the goal line, man, and let that be that. So
don't get back in the spread and have to snap it back 5 yards on the goal line. That never made sense to me either.
Coach LaFleur is
a run first offense. You know, the Owls ranked 7th in the nation last year in rushing. So, you know, they did go 9-4. I know it's Temple, but you know, like you said, J-Mac, with the young quarterbacks, the big backs that they got, you know, pound the rock, switch to that style that's winning in the SEC. Look what Florida spread did. Look what Auburn spread did. And, you know, Alabama and LSU were playing for the national championship. And you see what they're doing.
You had the eye formation, had two teams in the championship game. And that was because of the media and the bias towards Alabama. If you ask me, with the two teams that should have been in the championship were a spread team, Oklahoma State, which is the kind of offense that recruits want to play in. If you throwing the ball all around the field, you running up the Oklahoma State was in the top 10 in passing and rushing. So and my point is you can do it both, and the spread is what brought Auburn the championship. Auburn lined up in the I formation from 1950 to, you know, till Malzahn got here and didn't win a championship. And then you win a championship running the spread, and now all of a sudden
I know Ron Mack says this all the time, and we always go back and forth, but and for some unfortunate circumstances, like in 1993 when Auburn was undefeated, I say that is a national championship type of season. In 2004, Auburn was undefeated. That's a national championship type season. And through the 80s with Bo Jackson and the early 90s with Pat Dye, it was numerous SEC championships. So Auburn has been a very successful program and has been undefeated in some unfortunate circumstances, would have some extra rings in the trophy case. So it can be done. I think that at that time, you got to just go. You just like Coach Paul said. Yeah, it was two I teams this year because those were the best two teams in the country. But you had an Oklahoma State team that ran the spread that was probably, you know, should have been or could have been in that game and had a chance to win. So I just think it goes to what you have on campus. And so I'm speaking of recruits, I don't think these recruits even look at depth charts or anything anyway. I think they just go for the name of the school because I see plenty of receivers going to Alabama or LSU or China with Florida State. And I'm like, son, don't you know there's like, first of all, Auburn, Alabama, and Florida State, they throw the football because obviously teams throw in college football. But they're not schools where you are going to get, you're going to have 50 plus catches. But recruits continue to look at, oh, that's Florida State. I'm going there. Like the kid Ricardo Lewis. He just switched his commitment from Auburn and is now going to Florida State. Well, Florida State probably has 10 on campus right now, probably 8 to 10 4 to 5-star receivers on campus right now. So he's going to be the 11th. Oh, you know, so to me, I think kids may think, oh, they want me so bad they're telling me this, but at the same time, you have so many people on campus. Why not go to, like you said, a school like Oklahoma State, who you know you're going to catch 50 balls? If you play a receiver, you're going to catch 50 balls. So, and you know, just like, because, I mean, we here are keeping it real, and we keeping it real. He's going to Florida State. And, you know, who knows, Eddie Goldman might, you know, go there, the number one D tackle in the country. There you got Mario Edwards, who's 290-something pounds, who's going to probably be a defensive tackle. And they got a kid from St. Pete, Dante Fowler.
Saw him at the Under Armour All-American game.
Yeah, he's pushing 260. Who knows, he may move inside here in 2 or 3 years. We got Big Shanks, our cousin from Prattville. He's there. On top of it, everybody was already there. So, with that being said, That's a lot of defensive tackles, and I'm sure all of them are just as high.
But like people say all the time, you know, Nick, and I use Alabama for example. Nick Saban doesn't sell, you know, he ain't gonna sell you playing time. He's gonna sell you the overall experience. He gonna sell you on the fact that, okay, yeah, it's 10 of them here, but out of those 10 that are here, the 8 that are in front of you, son, gonna be first round draft picks. And when they leave, it's gonna be your turn. And when it's your turn to be drafted, you're gonna be like Cody.
That's what kid. But that's the thing. That's what kids don't understand. Like going through college and I've been there. You want the experience, but you want the experience to be, you want to have the maximum experience when you're at the school. Like I was talking to Anthony Mix earlier and Devin Romeshu yesterday, and we were speaking of the amount of players that we had at Auburn. Yeah, we didn't throw the ball, and we all have fun. You know, we built lifetime relationships and everything. But at Auburn, you know, we had me, Devin Romeshu, Ben Obamanu, Courtney Taylor, Anthony Mix. Then we had Cadillac at running back, Ronnie Brown at running back, Brandon Jacobs. Then we had tight ends, Robert Johnson and Lorenzo Diamond. It was so many people. Even if we did throw the ball a lot and everybody could play, you could have had so much more at somewhere else. Now, obviously, I would never change the experience at Auburn because I got to play football in the SEC, get drafted, get some catches, and have fun. But at the same time, if you look at it, I could have had an experience at, say, a school like a Central Florida and caught 70, 80 balls, you know, a year. So it's kind of like, what do you want? Do you want to say I went to, you know, Florida State and played defensive tackle for a couple years and maybe got a chance at the league? Or do you want to say I went to, you know, North Carolina and started for 4 years and was a two-time All-American or two-time All-Atlantic Coast Conference player? So it's kind of like,
you also got to look at the generation that these kids are in, man. These kids just watch LeBron James leave from Cleveland, where he was the man, King James, to going to Miami to share the load with Bosh and Wade. So if sharing and waiting my turn and all this is not, if it's not that bad for LeBron James, who I idolize, I don't need to go nowhere like Auburn where I could play right now, or, you know, like Kentucky where I can play right now. I'll just go stack up at Alabama or Florida State or LSU. I'll wait my turn, and hopefully I'll get the money.
And I agree with that.
And I'll get a chance at a national championship. See, at Kentucky, I don't think there's anything wrong. But hell, you might not go to a bowl game.
See, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think that at times it's like Ricardo Lewis, for example. He's going to Florida State with all them receivers. Now, he probably thinks in his mind, I know I'm probably better than them, you know? Whereas a school like Auburn, we have some receivers – but the
Auburn got 10, don't have 10 on campus when he get there, just like Florida State. And, but the difference in Auburn and Florida State is on his way from Miami to Auburn, Florida State's in the middle. So he's closer to home.
What I'm saying is look at the depth. If you go to Florida State, there's 10, I would say if it was all, there's 10 Negroes there that's probably like, that look like you, you know. That's Florida State. There's 10 Negroes there that look like you, whereas Auburn there might be 4. You know what I'm saying? Like, or you may have this or that. So what I'm saying is, to me, it doesn't make sense to do that. I mean, I just kind of look through my time for the people at Florida State, like the guy Nick Maddox, who was like the number one player when I was there, to this guy, to that guy. And I'd be like, when you get up there, you just get lost in the wash because there's so many players. You know what I mean? And I think that if you kind of step back and look at it, why not go like Sammy Watkins? That was the best decision ever because he could have went to Florida State, but they probably got this guy who was number one the year before, that guy that was number one the year before. But he said, you know what? I'm going to go to Clemson and probably play from the first day I get there. And what he did, he's still in the ACC. He's not at Florida State. He's not at Florida. He's not at Alabama. He's not at LSU. He's not at Auburn. He's at Clemson, which is, you know, pretty much, you know, they up there. And he became the first consensus true freshman All-American wide receiver. So I look at situations like that. I'm not going to say, oh, just go to FIU just because, or go to Kentucky just because. But I'm looking at situations like, why not go to, you know, Ohio State, random. I mean, they got players up there up north, but if somebody like Ricardo Lewis goes to Ohio State, they're going to say, oh, he's a speed cat from Florida. We're going to throw him in there right now because he's a speed guy from Florida. There's not too much speed up here in Cleveland or in Cincinnati. So I just look at situations like that. But I know kids grow up in Florida and kids grow up in Alabama, and they want to definitely go to Auburn or Alabama or Florida or Florida State or the U. But
exactly. If you can play and you from Florida and they want you, you going to one of the big three, man. And that still hasn't changed. You know, even though Florida State was down for a minute, they was just down because they didn't have the coach
Coach Paul is a Seminole, and I always say something wrong. Ever since recently, something's wrong. There's no way you get the players they get and you're not competing for a national championship or win the ACC every year like they used to. Something's wrong. I don't know what's wrong.
Well, we were state champions this year, you know, and Jimbo's coming in. You got to give a guy 4 years, I think, to give him an honest look. So, you know, we'll see what Jimbo does this year. You know, we beat all the big teams in the state this year. So, but like you said, it's on a national level at Florida State. We don't give winning a bowl game here and there. We want to win a national championship.
I think
Coach Dawsey's done a great job recruiting, keeping the kids in state. As you see, we're getting the top five-star recruits the past couple of years over Miami, over Florida. So,
everybody,
you know, now we got to put those players that fit into our system onto the field. And, you know, like I said, I'm glad you talk about defensive tackles in Florida State, because national championships, just like Super Bowls, are won with defense. You know what I mean? It's, you can put up 40, but if you only give up 7, you know, it doesn't matter. So I like to see Florida State come back big this year. And, you know, we got to win a national championship or there's going to be some doubters about Jimbo Fisher. You know, it's the same way. You got to win. When you've won national championships in the past, your boosters, your alumni, they expect the national championship ring. Anything less is not enough, you know. The SEC championship is big. ACC championship is big. But if you don't win that last game, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I think Florida State, they have all the necessary, you know, things they need to be successful. They're good coaches, great recruiters, great players. They just got to put it together. And I think this should be the year, man. Like you said, if they don't make a run this year, there's going to be some doubters, because obviously E.J. Manuel is going to be, I think, a senior. He's been there for a minute. And, you know, got some running back coming back. Offensive line was young, but they're all back. A lot of defenders coming back. So, We're going to see, man. So, you know, it's going to be interesting here to see how Florida State can, you know, what they can do and if they can get back to how they were in those 90s and win another championship. But it looks like Florida, Ron Mack, is racking up on recruits down there. You on the line still?
Yeah, I'm on.
Yeah, man. So they're racking up on recruits. It looked like Stephon Diggs really enjoyed his visit down there, obviously, with somebody that we were trying to – we're trying to get, but he took a trip to Gainesville this weekend and he loved it. So,
well, he didn't commit, and I have to give the Auburn staff the benefit of the doubt. For the last couple years, they have recruited extremely well. So for Auburn to only have 16 commits, that tells me that's a red flag to me, saying that either Diggs or Goldman. It's a couple of those kids that they are waiting on that's already committed to them silently, and they're just going to spring it on signing day or right before signing day to try to get that mojo going. To only have 16 commits at this time. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think Coach Chizik is doing a wonderful job. I think Truba Taylor's good. I like the hire of the defensive coordinator from the Atlanta Falcons, who's at Georgia and spent some time in the SEC. And then you go and you get an offensive coordinator who has spent some time, you know, at Florida. He's a quarterback coach, you know. So I'm I'm on board at giving them the benefit of the doubt. But like I've said previously, Coach Chizik is, I think, 1-3 or one in, he's 1-3 against Alabama. He's 1-3 against LSU, and he's 1-3 against Arkansas.
What's
so he
mean,
is 3-9 against the biggest rivals in the West.
Hold on, what you mean?
What you mean what I mean?
What
I
you
just
mean?
Told you what I mean.
How many years you been there?
This is his third year.
Yeah, so he can't, he's
3-9 against LSU, Alabama, and Arkansas. And all three of those wins came in one season.
And he's a national champ. He was a national champion, so that's going to give him three more years.
Yes, it was. It was. But at the same time, he sandwiched that national championship between two from his biggest rival, man. So let's keep it real. Let's be honest. You're an Auburn graduate, Auburn alumni, ex-player, okay? Your head coach, Tommy Tuberville, they tried to run him after he had beat his rival 5-6 times in a row. So for a guy who, let's say he loses to, let's say Coach Chizik goes 8-4 this coming year, and he loses to Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, and he is 3-12 against the SEC West big dogs. How you think they're going to go over on the plains?
Okay, well, first and foremost, like we knew this year, they played a crazy amount of true freshmen. So they're going to give him this year. They gave him this year. They're going to give him next year. And then when all those guys are juniors, like we said plenty of times, then we will be back in the discussion for an SEC national title. So they will give him this year and next year. This year he's 8-5. Next year I'm thinking he'll do a little better, maybe be 9-4. And the year after that, there's no excuse.
Yeah, but what about? I mean, your SEC West is.
I mean,
you have to win.
Losing
to Atlanta.
What are you saying?
We ain't talking about a national championship. We're talking about winning the
Monroe. Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe. Okay, he lost. Now he's won two national championships at Alabama. He had on his resume. Just look at Nick Saban on his resume. He lost to Louisiana Monroe.
Uh-huh.
Louisiana Monroe. He gave up a 24-21 lead at home to Auburn. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So those two things in itself, obviously he has two rings. But if you want to look at it like that, I mean, come on. You know, he couldn't score a touchdown. He couldn't score a touchdown at home against LSU. And lost that game. I mean, he's lost games. Obviously, he has two rings.
He's lost to Auburn once in the last 4 years.
Okay. He lost to Auburn once.
That's his biggest rival. Florida State and Miami. In order to keep those kind of jobs, you got to beat your rival. Am I lying in assuming that?
You're absolutely right. What I'm saying is this. He brought a national title to the Plains. They're going to give him, they gave him this year, and it was an 8-5 year. They won a bowl game. I mean, hold on. If I'm not mistaken, they finished as a top 25 team. You know?
Yeah.
So he was number one. His first year came in. Went to the bowl game, won a great bowl game down here against Northwestern. Went undefeated, won a national title. You know, they start off the season pretty good, then had a rough season with a lot of true freshmen. But the rough season still landed him a top 25 ranking. And so in 2 years he's been the national champion and in a top 20 team with a million freshmen. Now obviously next year they're gonna expect more because everybody's gonna be growing up just a little bit and you know, looking for a 9-4 year, you know, 9-4 year to get better and when all these kids are juniors now it's time to get it. It's time to get it. Just like, you know, like it's back to regular Auburn football. But obviously this year they struggle, but they were ranked in the top 20.
Okay.
So you can't fire a coach. You can, but it's tough to fire a coach after he wins a national title and is ranked in the top 20. I mean, if that's the case, you need to holler at Will Muschamp. He down there getting mobbed.
Tommy Tuberville Tommy Tuberville says, hello, I kept Auburn in the top 25. In my tenure at Auburn,
yeah,
I kept Auburn in the top 25.
And
I went undefeated in 2004.
Yeah, and
they ran me out.
Undefeated year in 2004 kept him in 2005, 2006, we'll say 2007, 2008, and then I guess Chizik came in 2009. So that undefeated year gave him, you know, a big win at Alabama my senior year up until through that next year. We beat Wisconsin in the bowl game, and then we played them in the undefeated year. I mean, that gave him four or five more years. So Chizik's undefeated year gave him 3 years.
Okay.
At least.
Okay.
So, you know.
So basically, what you're telling me is if Coach Chizik doesn't beat Alabama, LSU, or Arkansas this coming year or the following year, that third year, he's going to get another year.
We can say this, write it down. He will not lose to Alabama, LSU, and Arkansas next year. He won't lose all three of those games. Write that down right now. He will not lose to Arkansas.
Let's just say two then. Let's say Alabama and LSU.
I'm keeping it real. If he loses Alabama and LSU next year, he won't get fired.
He ain't going to get fired after this year losing to him. I'm talking about this year and the following year.
SEC rivals, I'm not even going to say that Alabama or LSU will win next year. Like, Alabama or LSU, I'm not even going to say that both of them will beat us for sure next year. I don't care what they got coming back.
Okay.
War damn Eagle. Yeah, I hear you. I'm keeping it real. I'm just telling you.
I gotta keep both of y'all real because you got your War Eagle glasses on. Bottom line is that Chizik, if he loses all three of them and goes 0-10, he's gone. Now, if he loses all three of them and goes 9-4, like you said, J-Mac, he might stick around. So let's just keep it real, depending on how those losses come and how horrible of a season you have.
Keep it real to determine
on whether your job as a coach stays or not. You know, if you're winning, you're building, you got the administrative, the alumni behind you, you're just still filling up the stadium. Bottom line is you're still got your job. You know, if you're recruiting, you're bringing in top recruits, and, you know, you're doing it clean, and that's what the administrative wants, they're going to keep you around. You know, now, if you're losing your ass off and, you know, other things happen, and you know what happens when you start losing, the whole thing starts to unravel, it's gone. So let's keep it real.
Paul, let me ask you a question.
SEC, that's the top level.
Yeah. Coach Paul, let me ask you a question about the boxing world and Mayweather. I'm sure you keep up boxing a little bit or whatnot. And, I mean, it always seems, I know we're in a new day and age with Twitter and the internet and all that other crazy stuff, but I mean, it seems that Pacquiao and Mayweather can never get this damn fight to happen. Now, obviously, Mayweather's got a situation or whatnot, and he's talking about he don't want 50-50. Why is it not like it used to be when, hey, I'm Mike Tyson, I think I'm the best fighter, and hey, I'm Holyfield, I think I'm the best fighter. We just gonna fight, and we both gonna get bread, we both gonna get money, we both gonna get paid, and we gonna go our separate ways. What's up with Mayweather? I think it's more so Mayweather. Obviously, Pacquiao has his little thing going on and what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do. But for the most part, I think it's Mayweather just kind of trying to control the whole situation with this fight. I mean, to me, it really irks me because obviously he's, you know, Money Mayweather. He got all the money in the world and he think he's pretty and all this. But, I mean, why won't he just fight? Why won't he fight? Even if it's 50-50, why won't he fight?
Well, like you said, who wants 50-50? Especially if, you know, it's all about the money right now. They didn't have pay-per-view, online demand to your phone. People are going to be watching the fight, paying for it. You know, and it's all about the money. And that's what it comes down to. It ain't about just who's got the heart and about fighting now. You know, and when you got all these promoters and TV people and contracts, they're trying to make their money off of it. and it just, it, by the time it gets to the boxer saying, I want to fight you, you know, the red tape in between is just ridiculous now. And that's why, you know, that's what's hurt boxing, actually.
Yeah, Coach Paul, I just think that, it's really ridiculous. I mean, if you are the best fighter, you're undefeated, and you feel that you are the best, you know, fight the best. And I think he's running from that because he obviously wants to end his career as being, you know, I guess the only guy that was has ever been undefeated. And he can go down and say he is the greatest because he never lost a fight. I think that's his whole goal and what he's trying to do. And if he can get out of the fight and as time goes on, they're both going to get older and it's not, you know, it's going to lose the spice that it had. So, you know, that's just how I feel about it. I don't like it. I wish they would just go ahead and fight and get it over with, you know?
Well, I mean, maybe it's because the fight can't happen until May anyway. So maybe this is just some kind of, like you said, press release stunt. Fight's not going to happen, and then, you know, it could happen tomorrow, and then when it does, it just creates a buzz, and maybe with, like you said, the whole Twitter thing, they're just trying to create a buzz of what's going on, saying it's not happening, it's happening, and who knows how far apart both sides are, so I'm sure every day everybody's money's riding on it, and at the end, you know, like you said, maybe Mayweather is dodging them.
Yeah, man. I mean, I want to know this off the subject, and with that Lee Evans play, and I just thought about it. With Lee Evans in Baltimore, man, I know we got off boxing real quick, but I wanted to ask you, on Keeping It Real, do you think that was a touchdown?
I mean, after further review, you know what I'm saying? That's why they have it. You know, it's controversial. I was rooting for New England, so, you know, I was happy with the result.
We'll be back same time next week on Keeping It Real. We out of here.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in to Keeping It Real with Jairus McIntyre again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Until then, keep it real, real, real. Keep it real.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.